this is Julie.
Hey, and this is Scott.
And this is A Good Story is Hard to Find, where two Catholics talk about books and movies and the one reality we see beneath everything.
Yes, that's it. And this is episode number 4.
Ooh.
Yeah. And this week we're going to be talking about a movie, an Australian movie, called The Castle.
Yes. A little comedy that I'm always surprised that nobody's ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. And I hadn't heard of it until you mentioned it, and I'm awfully glad you did. I sure enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
So you liked it. That's good.
I really did. I thought it was hilarious. And warm. You know, it was, I really
enjoyed it. Yeah. It's, just to tell the basic premise, and it's very basic because it is a small little indie movie, you'd call it these days, though I don't think that term was out when it came out. But it's about a family who lives at the end of a runway at an airport in Australia, and they are so happy with their home and their family. And then one day the airport wants to buy up all the land because they want to expand. And the father does not want to sell the house and move anywhere else because that's their home. It's their castle. And he winds up trying to see how he can take legal action to stop them because nobody seems to understand. They keep saying, well, we have the legal right. And he's like, but it's not right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And they offer him, $70,000,
mm-hmm.
Whatever that's worth at the time they made the movie. What year was this movie? You know, I should have looked that up before we started.
You know, I don't. Was the early, middle
ages?
The
DVD that I have says 1997.
Wow, really?
Yeah, but it may be older than that. It just says copyright 1997 Miramax Film Corporation. So that may have been when they obtained it or whatever.
Yeah, I remember seeing it at the movies.
Oh, really?
Which, yeah. My husband and I, we were in on the beginning.
No kidding. Wow.
Yeah, I know. And I don't remember. I think we'd been to something and we'd seen a preview and thought it looked kind of interesting. And so that's why 97 surprises me, because we had very small children at the time and we weren't seeing a lot of movies just because we saw a trailer then. that's out of that lifestyle.
Gotcha.
So, but
yeah. And like you said, the movie's Australian, so the accents are there. And the first time I watched it just regular. And then the second time I watched it, I put the subtitles on. And I did catch a little bit more, you know. It wasn't that I couldn't understand him, but there was a little bit more that I got out of it when I had the subtitles on there.
Well, and I saw people, I was looking up the basic trivia at IMDb yesterday, and I saw one person who was really surprised that so many non-Australians embraced the movie, because this person said that there are so many very Australian themes going through it. And that may be, but what I saw was a lot of very common human themes going through it. Mm-hmm. So, just for a little of the trivia, this is such an indie movie that it was shot in 11 days instead of 20, because that's how long they could afford to feed the cast and crew. And the family's last name is Kerrigan, because that's the name of the people whose tow trucks they could borrow.
Oh, wow.
And it was on the side of the truck.
Uh-huh.
Yep. Yeah. And the only other piece, because this is such a tiny movie, is that this is Eric Bana's first role. And he's a pretty minor star anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've never really seen any of his regular movies, but he was the son-in-law.
Right, right.
Who always repeated everything in a more complicated way.
Yeah, and who is disappointed with the justice system.
Disenchanted.
Disenchanted.
May I just say how disenchanted I am with our legal system? Yes.
Right. So, yeah. So one day, Kerrigan, Daryl, I think is his first name.
Yes.
You know, yeah, he gets a visit, you knock on the door, and basically they want to take away his house, you know, just so we're clear. The government wants to take away the house so they can build a giant addition to the airport.
Yes.
And they've got a little subdivision going on there. There's, I think, three or four houses.
Yes.
In a subdivision that never really came to fruition. And they can't figure out why.
Yeah.
As these planes roar overhead, you know, constantly roaring overhead.
And he stands in his backyard and he looks up at the power lines that are right by his land and says, oh, well, this is an indication of man's ability to generate power. And he thinks it's a great thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the charm of this movie, is that this family is what we would think of as completely clueless. They don't compare themselves to anyone else, and they're perfectly happy with the wife doing these craft projects that are definitely subpar, and everybody's just proud of her when she does them. The one of the sons spends all his time trading for things out of the local swap paper.
Yep.
And another son is in prison for an armed robbery. I guess he fell in with a bad crowd, as they say.
Yes,
he didn't mean to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And he's the least violent, most normal-looking criminal in just like a regular little cell that you've ever seen. He has a picture of his family on the wall, and he lies there and looks at it all the time. Mm. And then the story is told by the youngest son, and you'd think I'd remember his name. But anyway,
his name starts with a D as well.
Yeah, I always think it's Dale.
I think. Dale?
Dale, that's it. And he essentially narrates the movie, and he is the most average of the bunch, I guess. But he loves his family so much. When they're all together in the evenings having fun, watching, you know, funniest home videos, he'll get sad thinking about his brother in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's a good one to communicate that the key factor of this family is how much they love each other.
Yes.
Which is what I find warm and endearing. And I guess the thing that makes the movie interesting, because otherwise it's just quirky, is that as the father is pursuing his legal means, he falls in accidentally with someone just through his sheer friendliness that is able to help them take the court case to a level where they could actually possibly get something done.
Yeah.
And so then you see the contrast between this person, who's extremely sophisticated and a lawyer, and the family,
mm-hmm.
too.
Yeah.
But most of it's just left up to you seeing the family.
Right, right. And that QC, the lawyer, was one of the most fascinating characters to me in the show as well.
Mm-hmm.
The second time through it, I was looking for clues. You know, why did he do what he did, you know?
Mm-hmm. And why did he help them? Because it's out of
nowhere. Why did he help them? And it struck me, you know, I don't know if we're getting ahead here, but even after the case was finished, and they became fast friends, and you know, it was, why was that? You know, that was a really interesting character to me, and
mm-hmm.
you know, but the movie's full of quirky characters. You mentioned quirky. When I watched it the first time, I thought, you know, this reminds me a little bit of Raising Arizona. And you mentioned that you weren't a big fan of that film,
right?
The quirkiness and kind of the way it was put together really was similar to me. And I really liked Raising Arizona. I liked the Coen brothers movies.
And most people do.
Yeah. And the castle, this just reminded me of it. Just in the way that all the characters just are so wacky and, you know, always saying things, you know, out of left field. And then they're funny. They're, you know, even in Raising Arizona, they were pretty warm. They loved each other so much. And
I still remember the scene where, like, there she's driving the car around and he's robbing the store so he can get diapers in Raising Arizona.
Right.
So I think the thing about this one that I just didn't think to connect it, because that one, Raising Arizona, is deliberately over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And this one kind of pulls it down a notch to where the father's hobby is, you know, he likes to add on additions to his house. And he'll add a Greek patio. And of course, it's nothing like you'd think of when you think of whatever a Greek patio is. Or he's got greyhounds. They all kind of live in an old treehouse in the backyard he's put down on the ground. It's kind of like an in-between level of that, I guess, normalcy and Raising Arizona. But I do see what you're saying. It's that quirkiness, except did Raising Arizona ever have a normal character put in for contrast?
I don't think so.
Their neighbors are all odd.
Yeah, everybody's odd.
Yeah, because like Farouk is one of my favorites. He's from Lebanon, and he says people talk to him about, well, but there's all the planes overhead. And he says, I'm from Lebanon. If they're not dropping bombs, I don't care if they're going overhead. And which at the time was more topical, but for Lebanon specifically. But the lawyer who can never get his Xerox machine to work, mm-hmm. or his copier to work, the I can't remember now. Sorry.
Yeah, no, no. The but that QC, I keep going back to him, but let's talk about family first.
Because,
you know, it was neat that we were watching this right now because one of the Pope's prayer intentions this month is for family. And when I watched it, you know, that's really what I got out of it was really the family. You know, mm-hmm. it just kept saying the family, the family, the family. And the boy that was in prison, his name was Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that kind of connected with me was kind of the prodigal son story. Wasn't it interesting, though, why didn't the dad ever go visit his son in prison?
Oh, I didn't think about that because only Dale does.
Yeah, the young Dale son. Dale goes in
because
there.
Every Friday.
Yeah, every single week, and it's not like the father is really.
He doesn't seem.
It's almost like of the prodigal son story. I mean, the dad is saying, "Well, he's going to come back. You know, he's going to come back."
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, I think there was a line in the movie that said something like, you know, near the end, you know, he said he was more proud of him now than he even was when he was in prison.
Well, that's Dale for you, but yeah, I know. Well, and that's, I guess you could look at it if you were going to look at it too seriously and you could criticize it because they're fairly unquestioning mm-hmm. of, you know, well, he didn't mean to do it. He didn't, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yet when he was talking to that lawyer, with the Xerox machine lawyer, he did say, well, it's not your fault he got 7 years. He robbed the convenience
right.
store. So and he wasn't saying, oh, my boy didn't do it, you know.
When he was talking to his wife, they kind of at one point say something, and she says, oh, Daryl. And he says, no, I could have done better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could have done more or something like that. He takes some blame on himself, or he's responsible also for how he raised him. But and who knows what that means. But like and you do see that at one point another son pulls out a gun when they're being threatened, which is some of the most comical threatening you'll ever see. And he's like, I told you after Wayne, no guns in the house. Mm-hmm. Get rid of it.
Get rid of it, right.
Yeah, so there are a few things where you do see there's the moral character, but that's not what they're focusing on. They're focusing on the fact that they love each other so much. And I hadn't thought of that prodigal son thing, because what he says is, if we sell the house, where's Wayne going to come home to? This is what he's been looking forward to.
Right.
And when Dale tells him that, Wayne says at one point, well, it doesn't matter. Wherever you are, wherever the family is, that's home.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. And when I was watching it, because I've only seen it, oh my gosh, so many times, because we'll watch movies with people and they've never seen it. And this is one of the two or three we always show. Mm-hmm. And I was struck by how the father really is, as the Pope would say, or as Catholics would say, the head of the family. And it's shown in a way that you realize how loving everybody for who they are and seeing them for the real people that they are also can be a very powerful thing. Mm. And maybe that's reading too much into this little movie, but sorry for the dogs,
no, it's all right.
But which is kind of appropriate. There's dogs everywhere in the movie, but because he makes them feel good about themselves, even if all they did was dig a hole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's his point about the castle. It's not a house. It's a home. It's where all their memories are. And they keep being compared to a famous Aboriginal case that, you know, American viewers don't know. And it does get kind of filled in for you. But that got won by an Aborigine because the land holds their memories. So a big company couldn't take it away. And he's like, that's what matters to him here. This house holds their memories. It's where everything's happened that's important to them, which is within their family.
Right, right.
And you also see how the family has to kind of put up with him some ways, that it's not an unquestioning approval all the time. Like when he's out at Bonnie Doon this piece of, it looks like a wasteland, but more power lines. So that's good. And it's a lake, and it's like one of the ugliest pieces of lake you'll ever see. And they just love it. It's a kit home that they've built out there. They go for the weekends, and he'll stand out there and he'll say, "Dad just loves the serenity. Sometimes I think he just loves saying the word." And he'll stand out there just out in the middle of nowhere and go, "Oh, how's the serenity?" And,
how's that serenity?
I know, how's that serenity? And even the youngest son, who's the dimmest of the group, will get this kind of strained look on his face like, yeah, Dad, you could stop now. Or the "We're going to Bonnie Doon" song that he likes to sing all the way to Bonnie Doon, which is just kind of "We're going to Bonnie Doon" over and over until the mother stops him.
When they showed when they originally bought the land at Bonnie Doon, and he says, "We have no idea why it was so cheap, and there's these huge power lines and stuff all throughout the property, just like his house." It was really
cool. Exactly. So they don't worry about judging it by those standards, I guess, is what you'd say. Well, I guess we're kind of well into the spoiler section.
Oh, I guess we are, yeah.
But I don't think this ruins it for anyone, because
for certain
it's hard to describe. But this way we could go on and talk about that more sophisticated character that you're interested in.
Yeah. Also, if we just stay on the father for 1 second.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I was just going to say spoilers, because we're just talking.
You bet. You bet. It is, you know, you mentioned how important that he was to the whole thing. You know, I can't imagine that family without him.
No.
Yeah. And I can't remember where I saw a talk. I'm pretty sure it could have been a homily or something. But, you know, we talk so much right now about things like gay marriage and things like that being threatening to the family. And I don't really see that as a huge threat to the family myself. But the thing that I do see as the threat to the family that we are going through is the divorces and the dissolutions of the family, and how important the dad is when he's there.
Exactly.
And this film really shows that in a really incredibly warm and funny way. Because
You're right.
Because if he wasn't there, how would that family function correctly? You know, and I say correctly, they are wacky and they are out there. But it is an incredibly well-functioning family.
Yeah, that's the thing. They don't. And everybody accepts them the way they are. You know, the policeman who comes to the door and says, "Look, I know what you're up against, but do it the right way." And nobody's stopping to say, "What a bunch of idiots." They're just that was the other thing that surprised me, is when he decides, "No, I'm not giving up my house," which any normal person would do. And then they increase the offer.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, it's like $85,000 or $95,000 at this point. He's like, "No, forget it. Not happening. These are my principles." And the family's like, "Well, you're right. Here's the deal."
And that's why we love him.
And that's why we love him so much. And you're right. It does show the father as a key figure. And I think maybe that's why I like, because the first time I saw it, I was like, "Oh, that's a funny little movie. I like it." And the second time I saw it was many years later on DVD or whatever, videotape probably at the time. And I was struck then by how much this family loves each other. And it wasn't until recently that I realized it's because of the father that they love each other. They would still love each other, but he is the linchpin. And when he doesn't know what to do anymore, when he's been struck the lowest that you'll ever see him, and he can't affirm, you know, "I dug a hole today, Dad." He can't say anything. The other son, "Well, they're trading for this." He can't even say anything about that or praise his wife's cooking. And none of them know what to do.
Yeah.
He's the leader that they take everything from. And then when he's packing and they're all cheering, trying to cheer him up, and the way they cheer him up is by telling them, "We love you no matter what. You did the best you could," and that they're telling him the stuff he tells them.
Yeah.
And
whatever the opposite of letting someone down is,
right,
that's what you did.
Right. Exactly. I don't know how to say it, but you are the linchpin. And he feels bad because he feels like he let everyone down, but he did what he's always praised, like the lawyer, for doing. You did your best. He just doesn't have the resources to do anymore.
Right.
And for Catholics, I think a lot of times they're looked at or anybody. Like, I know Mormons have an incredibly strong family-oriented faith and way that they live. Anybody who lives that way, the modern world looks at it as taking on this almost maybe an Old Testament sort of a view of being under somebody's thumb. And that's why I liked this, because it shows that's not really the case. This is what you're supposed to do. The husbands is, you know, St. Paul says, wives obey your husbands, but husbands love your wives. And then he goes on to say something about don't give your children a reason to rebel against you. Well, that's this whole situation. They obey him because they love him and they trust him to know what's best for them. And that all mirrors what our relationship with God is supposed to be. That's why the family is called the domestic church right here. And it's so funny to see it in this little movie where there's not a lick of religion or anything else in it, but it's that perfect mirror of this is entertaining, but it's also true, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I just, as you were talking, I just looked up what the divorce rate in the United States is, and it's 41%.
And Catholics are just the same as everyone.
And they are. Yeah. And so are Mormons, by the way.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking, I don't know if the Mormons
better. I don't know for certain what the divorce rate is there, but, you know, it happens plenty. It just seems like in our society right now, we just don't have the responsibility or the sense of responsibility.
And I think too, all the, I am all for personal empowerment, obviously, because my husband is like, oh, is it time for your podcast? Go right ahead. Is it time for your blogging? Go right ahead. He's like that father, you know, he reads what I do. He doesn't listen to the podcast, but he only has so much time, but he's very supportive. But, I know that in helping with this marriage retreat that we've worked on for so many years, because it helped us a lot. One thing I've realized, and this has been a longer process than that, but about myself is you have these standards of perfection that have been drilled into you by our society. And it's not just for us. We hold them for everyone else. And we expect them to all be perfect. And if they're not towing the line and you're not doing this, oh, well, suddenly all your friends are saying, you know what? You could do better.
That is a really good point. I think
instead of
really matches kind of what I see in everyday life. So you're saying that people are saying, "Well, my marriage is not as good as it could be, and it's because of who I'm married to. It's not because of
This husband or wife.
I could be doing better right now." Is what?
This husband or wife is not the perfect person, and because. And you can't blame, like, you know, fairy tales or Hollywood, but that's all a powerful influence on us, along with this, you know, Americans at least have this drive to be the best you can be. And, you know, that's fine. But there's no looking at the fact that all of us fall short of perfection. And so I would hear wives, and I'm just as guilty, and hopefully not as much now, because we're always trying to get better. But of, oh my gosh, this person does this and they do that. And well, you know, you let all that stuff add up and you don't talk to the other person and you don't give them a chance to air what they're saying, which is what I see a lot in this stuff, because that's a lot of what this marriage retreat facilitates is a safe place to talk to each other about things that are contentious or that you're afraid to bring up because it's been a source for fighting. And it really helps them get through it. And it's amazing what just talking to each other can do and how much, once you're in the habit of that, you suddenly go, oh, well, you quit looking so much at the other person and demanding so much of them, and you start demanding more of yourself too. And it becomes a team effort. And yeah, it's work, but it's work that you're both doing together, and it makes your marriage so much better. And in our society, it's, you know, oh, that didn't work. Give it up and move on. And that's, at least among women, that's, you'll hear a bunch of girlfriends getting together, and that's the first thing a bunch of them are saying. Rarely does somebody say, well, can you work it out? Have you seen a counselor? Have you tried this? Have you tried that? That's not the popular response anyway.
Right. It's getting more and more rare.
Yeah. And the other thing is this idea that single parenthood is admirable. And I understand there's, and don't get me wrong, I'm not saying that there's all kinds of circumstances where you can't help it. Someone left you or whatever reason there is, but there's this idea that it's just as good for the family or the child if it's a single parenthood situation and you need help.
Yeah.
You know, you need help in raising a family and you need help in just living your life. If you've got, does this make sense?
I
don't want to go off on a dangerous tactic of sounding like I'm condemning every single parent because I'm not.
No, absolutely not.
But it's not the model that you're meant to have. And that's why, because of it just, we're not meant to be alone. Mm-hmm. You know, we're meant for community. We're social people. And the family's the place where that starts.
Right. And, I don't know if, I mentioned the Pope's prayer intention.
Mm-hmm.
It's worded this way. It says, that all may respect the family and recognize its unmatched contribution to the advancement of society.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is like the central unit of our society.
Mm-hmm. It's the cornerstone. Mm-hmm. And I meant to look up in the catechism. There's a whole wonderful section that I will say is to everyone is very readable. I mean, we hear catechism and, very complicated. Mm-hmm. Really not.
No.
Easy to read.
Right.
And if you've got a catechism, I would encourage you to kind of look up that section if you're listening and just kind of see what it says, because it's really beautiful. And you wouldn't believe, for all the things you hear about the Catholic Church, you wouldn't believe how supportive it is of every single thing that we've been saying. That if you're a single parent, you need the help of your community. That if, you know, you're a father, you should be supporting your family and children. Here's why you obey your parents. It's not just because we said so and that's it. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the model that this family shows you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, on another tag, just briefly, I read something on, I think it was the Deacon's Bench blog.
Oh, yeah.
Where somebody had commented something about, you know, hey, what about single people? You know, mm-hmm. we're single and nobody really talks about us. What would you say to that?
In terms of what?
It is, I don't know. It's just like, you know, everybody's holding up marriages. You know, do you have to be married? You don't have to be married. I mean, you have to be married.
You see that being argued about on blogs where people will say single is not a vocation, and vocation to people who haven't really understood or heard that before means you find what you're supposed to do in life. Like the religious people, that's their vocation. But since Vatican II, what the church has tried to explain and people have tried to understand more is being married is your vocation. Mm-hmm. It's all about how do you get to heaven? Mm-hmm. And, you know, husbands and wives are supposed to help get each other to heaven. They're supposed to raise their children so they have, you know, faith and a proper mindset or a proper environment to develop their own faith so they can hopefully find their spouse or their vocation as a priest or religious, which includes nuns, have their vocation. And you're right, single people don't get mentioned, although I do know one person who has consecrated herself to the single life, and you can have a life as a single consecrated person, evidently, that I don't think I'm going to find the person I'm going to marry. And so I'm going to live a holy life as a single person, as an example to society with all my friends and everything. I would say that that's the only option you have if you're single. If you haven't met the person that you're to fall in love with or that's right for you. And as I try to point out to my girls, and I've had people argue with me over this too, and that's when I just get down to I can't nitpick anymore. But I really believe that God made someone for each of us in his plan. If that's, you know, if you're to be married and you meet that person, but you know, a lot of times you meet that person and they are the person that you fall deeply in love with and they're in love with you. But one of you has been messed up, or both of you, by life already, mm-hmm. by your family, by some other horrible circumstance, by illness, by whatever, Well, that's part of your journey together also. That's what brings you and that person to a greater ability to make it to heaven and to be there for the community around you and your family and everything. Yeah. I realize we've gone a long way from
asking the question. So.
Yeah, well, no, yeah. See, you got me started. Sorry for you.
No, it's good stuff. It's good stuff. One other thing that I thought of as I watched this family operate was, you know, how simple they were.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a... I looked up the verse where... It's in Matthew 18, verse 3.
Uh-huh.
It just says... I'm looking at the New International Version here.
Okay.
It says, "And he said, I tell you the truth, unless you change and become like little children, you will never enter the kingdom of heaven." And it made me think of that verse.
Yeah.
Because it struck me how much easier it is to move in our society if you're not burdened by what everybody is dealing with every single day. And these people are not. They don't let it bother them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I know that... I've struggled with this a little bit. I know that it's a tenet of Buddhism to try and separate yourself from the entire world, meaning you put yourself in a place where nothing affects you, and then they say, okay, so now you've really reached it. You know, this is nirvana because you know nothing can touch you now. Right?
Yeah.
But I don't think that that's the Catholic way. The Catholic way, I mean, you need to interact with the world. The world is part of the whole thing, right? So,
right.
But yet, as we become more adult, we stress about things that often don't need stressed about, or, you know, that are not worthy of stress. And to me, whenever this verse comes up and they talk about becoming like little children, you know, the little children, they just don't have these worries and concerns about every day. And this whole family didn't have that either.
Yeah, they live in the moment.
In the moment, and they don't let this stuff bother them. You know, he's watching his America's Funniest Home Videos, and that is the pinnacle of entertainment.
And they're happy because they're all together laughing.
Right, and that's what's important.
Yeah, and in fact, that's what the youngest son, exemplifies by the fact that they're all there laughing and having a great time, and he can't help thinking of his brother, who doesn't have the privilege of being there laughing at the Funniest Home Videos with them,
right.
Because that's... Who wouldn't want to be there with their family? That makes me think of two things. And of course, now I can't remember one of them. But one of them is that I've been reading this little, it's a daily reader of excerpts from St. Teresa of Avila, if that's how you say her name. But she was just this morning, it was talking about the fact that you live in the world and you try to, you know, you interact with it and you help everybody around you. And because that's part of being a human being and being a good person and, you know, living like Christ did. But your main goal is always supposed to be on heaven. Your goal is not supposed to be on piling all this stuff up for yourself. And so she says, well, a lot of people ask me to pray for things like, you know, money or whatever. She goes, and I do it because they ask me. She says, but I always feel like God doesn't really listen to those prayers because that's not the point. And so that kind of resonates. And I wish I could remember. Oh, the other thing it made me think of was a lot of people look at this family and, you know, they're simple because they're not really the smartest people. And which, of course, they don't worry about at all. But that's kind of maybe where the contrast with the QC comes in, because I remember reading an article a while back that talked about really smart people who have kids whose IQs aren't really high. And they're not stupid. They're just, you know, the average middling IQ. And when they interviewed the parents felt so bad for the kids and all this. Well, they interviewed the kids, a lot of whom were in high school or college or a little older. And they found out that the kids felt really sorry for the parents, because the parents, they said, they're always worried about something. They're always stressing and thinking and, you know, they just never have a moment's peace and they never seem to enjoy themselves.
That's interesting stuff.
Yeah. And it to me, that kind of meant, I've always remembered it because I kind of thought, well, I don't know if I'm one of those super smart people, but I'm definitely one of those people who's going to think about stuff too much, right? Yeah. And I try to remember that living more in the moment and not borrowing trouble and worrying about tomorrow so much. And that's kind of more like that family as a goal in terms of enjoy where you are and what you're doing. Yeah. And I think that's maybe what the QC saw in Daryl, because I love the moment when Daryl meets him and he assumes they're both in the courts during a break. Mm-hmm. And Daryl's there trying to get his case moved on or dismissed so that they won't have to sell their house. And he meets Lawrence, and I can't remember his last name, because he calls him Laurie.
Yeah, Laurie, yeah.
He immediately makes it a nickname. He's the friendly. He's like, oh, hello there. You're waiting for something. And he says, oh, yes. Says the QC, my son's first appearance. He goes, oh, what did he do? He just assumes he's there because his son's in prison.
Yep.
And he's like, oh, no, he's going to appear as a barrister. And he goes, oh, you must be proud as punch. My daughter has a degree. I guess you need a degree for that. And he goes, yes, several. And very politely, but kind of in a confused way. And then and Daryl says, well, we've got a degree in our family. The day my daughter said she was accepted to something beauty school was the proudest day of my life. And he just, and it's that thing of, he doesn't even stop and feel abashed that this guy's degree is so much more, or even think that this guy would be on a different level. Cause he says, well, we'd never be able to do what our kids have done. And again, the guy looks a little confused and says, oh yes, that's right. And of course, later you find out he was one of the highest sorts of lawyers in the land. And I was struck by his unfailing courtesy.
Yeah.
He didn't look down on Daryl, and that's something that we've really lost.
Yeah, it's true. And that may be a clue, you know, as we've been talking here, it occurs to me that maybe the QC is sick and tired of the folks that he's with every day. And that's why he hooks up with Daryl, because Daryl is just, you know, pure in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And probably pretty darn refreshing, you know, compared to who he normally talks to every day.
Yeah, because think of the other side's lawyers. Of course, they're shown briefly and they're very stereotypic.
Yeah.
But the first guy who comes in to make the offer, he's extremely smarmy. He's looking down his nose at everybody
in a polite
way.
Yeah, and just so the listeners are clear, the QC ends up helping Daryl and win his case at the end. And then it goes further. It's not the QC just doesn't go away. The QC becomes part of the family's life, really, because, you know, Daryl, of course, invites him to Bonnie Doon, you know, the summer home or the vacation home.
Yeah.
And the narrator, Dale, says that we thought he was just being polite, but he just kept coming up.
Yeah, keeps coming. He must really like it. Up.
So, yeah, he must have. Yeah. You know, and it occurs to me now that might be it. Maybe he's like, you know, hanging out with this guy is really refreshing.
Well, and it's interesting, too, because Daryl doesn't go to him because he doesn't even know what he does.
Yeah. Has no
He's
idea.
Really at his lowest point, and that guy just shows up and he says, well, actually, just so happens I am a constitutional lawyer and I've been looking into this. So he was really struck by his case. And I think just the fact that he just takes everyone on their own terms. He doesn't judge them according to him. He doesn't judge himself according to them. He's ready to take them at face value.
Mm-hmm.
And I think of how often, especially, you know, in some of these blog conversations, and people will put themselves above other people and, oh, you idiot, you know more than me. And gosh, there was a thing where in a big group that I'm part of, that it's a bunch of people who've gone on this same sort of retreat for our church, somebody very innocently said, oh, a friend of mine is getting ready to go back to work after having a baby. She's interested in any thing about daycare. Mm-hmm. And this person who I don't know from Adam, but he's obviously in the group, and he took the opportunity to make sure that everybody was copied on his response, which was a stirring condemnation of any mother who goes back to work and doesn't stay home with her kids. And I was like, this is an example of what's wrong with our society today. Nobody cares what you think. You think this person might not want to stay home with her baby? Maybe she can't.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
You know, and he was like, well, you're just not sacrificing enough and blah, 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 blah. And I thought, ah, what about just answering the question?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, but see, we're all ready to sit in judgment. And even if we might have a different opinion, we're ready to make sure everybody hears it.
For certain. Yeah, just check out the average YouTube video comments.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you want to feel sad for our society, just check those out.
Yeah.
Almost any video, too. Almost anything. It doesn't really matter what it is. It's just vile.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It sure is. But yeah, I love the movie. You know, as you were saying that, one of my favorite lines in the movie is when the QC comes to his house and says, hey, by the way, I'm a constitutional lawyer. And then Daryl says, you've got 3 degrees in your family. Boy, I'd love to see your pool room.
Right, because the pool room is where he keeps all his treasures.
All his treasures, yeah.
Yes, yep. Along
this
with
is
his
going
lopsided
straight
table.
Straight to the pool room. That's what whenever like, somebody gives him something really special, that's it. It's going straight to the pool room.
And they said, oh, you should use it, Dad. And he's like, nope, I'm not even taking this out of the package. And they all, it's like, we prided ourselves on presence.
Yeah.
And that's another way you show each other you love each other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, didn't matter if it was a letter opener, which was what that was.
Right, right.
Oh, you know, yeah. And always ready to be proud of the other person and not ever look for what's wrong with it and not put the other people down.
Yep.
You know, the trip to Thailand that his daughter took on her honeymoon.
Yep.
Which is where Eric Bana comes in. That's who she's married to.
Exactly. Right.
So.
You know, I didn't realize that was Eric Bana until you said so at the beginning of the podcast. Because he was one of those guys where, you know, he looks kind of familiar, but I never really delved to find out who he was. And wow, that was the Hulk right there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what he was in. Okay.
Yeah, that's the only thing. That. Yeah. Oh, he was in that Star Trek movie too, Nemesis. No, the new Star Trek movie.
In the retooled Star Trek?
Yeah,
he was
the bad guy.
The Romulan bad guy? Mm-hmm. Or was it Romulan?
Yeah, he was Romulan. Yeah.
Oh, well, he was under so much makeup, and they were like, okay, now snarl extra good and be that crazy look in your eyes.
Yeah.
Which, like, I loved that movie.
Yeah,
it was so great.
Good movie.
But yeah, I guess that's okay. But that's where that was the first movie he was ever in. And he's, you know, there's not a lot for any of them to do, but he did it well.
Yeah, he did.
So,
yep. But thank you so very much because, this is going straight to the pool room this week. it's a keeper. It's definitely
a keeper.
I'm so
glad. Yeah. I think, yeah. And for me, the fact that each of our daughters has a DVD of it up for themselves.
Oh, wow.
Kind of says something about our family. I'm not sure if it's good or bad. But there you go.
It's all good. That's what it is.
Good, good. I'm glad. I'm so glad.
Well, cool. Well, have you got something extra for this week?
I do. And I was thinking, you know, it had been a little too long since we'd mentioned zombies.
Ooh, fantastic.
So, although in keeping with the humorous, I didn't plan it this way, but in keeping with the humorous aspect of this movie, this is a book I just finished reading. It's called Nita Life, Zombie Exterminator by Karina Fabian, I believe is how you say her name. And she is a Catholic author, although as she was getting ready to send me the review copy, she kept saying, it's not a Catholic book. Don't come back at me because it's not a Catholic book. But it's basically a very light take on the zombie tale. Nita Life is a zombie exterminator because in this universe of zombies, they can be repelled by ordinary household cleaners and things like bug spray. And that will hold them off long enough that you can get somebody with a chainsaw in there to really take their head off.
Mm-hmm.
And they get, basically, she's having legal problems, I believe. And so she's really needing money. And she's agreed to be on a reality TV show where she trains all these people who'd like to be exterminators to be members of the team. And whoever is the best exterminator at the end of the TV show wins $1 million.
Wow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And so it starts off halfway into the show and where it's like so-and-so was being eaten. He was being torn apart limb by limb and Nita Life's like, oh, I told them to not do it this way. So she's got problems with the people who are producing the show. She's got her own personal problems. You see a little bit of each of the people on the reality show and it's just fun. And she managed to keep it just detailed enough that when you get to the end, it's one of those, oh my gosh, is everyone going to live through this huge crisis? I really did care and I was interested. And I really didn't want her dating the person she was dating, so I was kind of interested in that. So it engaged me on a variety of levels. I really enjoyed it. It's a lot of fun.
Great. That sounds really good. Very cool. Well, I brought actually two things.
Ooh.
Because, you know, I was thinking about family.
Yes.
And so I brought out a couple of my family's favorite games.
Ooh.
Yeah, one of them that we really like to play is called Carcassonne. Carcassonne. And this is a game, my youngest is 10, and we've been playing this for a while. You know, an 8-year-old could easily play this game. And what it is, you put these tiles down, and you build this land, you know, so a tile would have like a road on it. And the tile, when you select the tile, you have to place it on the board in a way where the road matches up.
Yes.
So my daughter, even when she was littler, you know, like say 6, you know, she enjoyed just making the maps.
So, yeah.
You know, you didn't have to play the game with the pieces. You could just build the map, and she was loving that. So. But it's a really fun game. Carcassonne. I'm looking for
what do you do with the game, though? I mean, is it a war game?
Well, no, not really. You build this map, like I said, and you as you're building the map, you have these little guys that you place, and it can be a knight or a merchant or things like
okay.
that.
Okay.
And as you build the map, you can place it, and so like this guy gets this road, and when the road is complete, you get to count. You know, you may get if the road is 5 tiles long, and it ends on both ends, then you get 5 points.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
And then, but you only have a certain number of guys you can place, and the person could be in a castle, or it can be in a field, or whatever.
Okay.
And then at the end of the game, whoever has the most points wins.
All right.
So it's really fairly simple, but it's very, very fun.
Okay.
And the map is different every single time.
Yeah.
Now, one that we got more recently is called Small World.
I almost got that for our family for Christmas.
That is a fantastic game. There are zombies in it, so it can be in this podcast. No. what happens here is, again, you have a map. Now, this one's already built, and they have a different size map depending on how many people are playing.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a stack of cards that are races, and a zombie-like race is one of them. And you have a bunch of traits. So, like, you know, I'm just thinking... I'm going to have to open this up so I can describe it. Okay, so you've got like a race would be like a dwarf, right? And then the dwarf could have a special power called Berserk. And the Berserk power matched with the dwarf gives you kind of a unique combination of stuff. So what happens is you end up with this race and you try to take over as much of the board as you can. So it is kind of a combat type of a game. And then, you know, everybody else is trying to do the same. And when you feel that your race has done everything that they can, you can bring them into decline and get a new race.
And, really?
Yeah. So it's extremely fun. It's really fun. And again, my youngest is 10 and she loves it. So a 10-year-old can play it just as well as an adult can. And it's very fun.
I was just thinking, though, because that makes me, and I'm sorry, because now I'm going to push in and go, I also have, because there's a game by the Days of Wonder people that's like Small World, but you work with trains, and I wish I could remember. the Ticket name of
ride.
That.
Ticket to
That's
Ride.
It.
I have
That's
not. I've not played that game, but I've seen
well,
it.
Well, instead of Small World, I was our family always we always get a game from Santa still. Every year, yes, my children are grown. We deal with it. So it was between Small World and Ticket to Ride, and we got Ticket to Ride because my husband loves trains, so I was going with that aspect. Yeah. It's a really fun game, also.
I've heard it's terrific.
Yeah, you draw routes, and you have to build your routes, and you know, see who gets the route done by the time you've gotten so many points. And but then the other thing, and I'm sorry, but I'm just going to piggyback on your little thing.
It's fine, go ahead.
Which is when you said build the one where you build your map. Mm-hmm. Hannah at their company Christmas swap thing, she came home with this game called Zombies, which cracks me up now because I'm like, oh, it's all. I'm really not all about zombies, people. I'm just saying it just happens to come up. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of a similar thing where you're building the map as you go. And I'd never played a game like that, which makes it really fun. And you are a zombie hunter. And every time you put down a new piece, depending on how many entrances or exits there are to the area, you put down so many zombies, and sometimes they'll have big buildings, and that's got a certain number of zombies and lives and bullets that go in there.
Oh, neat.
And so you can win the game either by in the last half of the pack is put down the helipad, which is full of zombies when it gets put down. And you can either win your way to the helipad first and take off, which means you win, or you can kill 25 zombies first. And so what happens is it becomes a race over killing zombies, getting to where the most zombies are, or getting to the helipad, and there are a variety of different game-changing cards, in which case people suddenly start throwing zombies in each other's ways, or, oh, you've got brain freeze, you can't do anything for a turn. Mm-hmm. So it's a similar thing to that Carcassonne, I think.
Yeah.
A lot of fun.
Yeah, it's
a lot
fun. Of fun. Yeah,
very
there's
simple.
There's no killing zombies in Carcassonne, but it is fun.
Yeah, exactly.
That's, despite that fact, yeah.
Yeah, so now you've got, you guys, everybody else has got four different games to pick from.
That's right, that's right.
Yeah.
All right.
For family night.
Well, thanks so much, Julie. Thanks for this movie.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
been wonderful again.
I'm so glad you liked it. I'm always worried that people aren't going to like it because it is fairly simple, but... And then next, we're going to read a English mystery called The Franchise Affair by Josephine Tay.
Great.
And then the movie after that, we're going to be, can you believe it? We'll be in Lent this year.
Yeah.
Quiz show.
Quiz show, right.
In a month.
Yep. Directed
which I've
by
never
Robert
seen.
Redford.
Yeah.
Yep. Extremely good movie. I hope you
I've always heard it's
one.
Good.
Good.
Just never seen it.
Okay.
You know.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah.
Yep. And then after that, we're going to read Iflheim by Michael Flynn.
Yes.
So that'll be a fun talk.
Yes, I have to say, if anybody is reading and keeping up with this, which, you know, somebody else actually has a book on their wish list that we talked about, Sarah Reinhart.
Good deal.
So I'm pretty excited about that. Nobody's watching movies yet that we've seen, but, you know, I'm just going for that.
Well, everybody's seen Serenity.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
And if they haven't, what's wrong with them?
That's right.
No one's seen The Castle, but look for it. I bet you can rent it somewhere. And but Iflheim is one that's a little bit denser. So if you get done with The Franchise Affair, if you're keeping up, I would advise starting it as soon as you get done. I love it, and I want to read it a second time. But
fantastic. Yep, me too.
That's why.
All right.
There's so much in it.
Great.
Okay.
Right. Well, we will see you in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks, everybody.
Yep, thank you. See you later.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.